Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Moment with Self. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Sadiq, bringing you another hour of psychological information and social observation. As an educator and a psychotherapist, I meet an array of different people every day, and by paying attention to their emotional states and their interactions with others, I find a window into their worldviews. It's really interesting to learn about their habits, the perceptions, and the conclusions that some people make based upon their own subjective mind and their past histories, where they're coming from, what they believe in. Very often, those subjective understandings create very huge emotional challenges that take a very long time to get through them. One of those challenges happens when we're breaking up in a relationship. Separation is not an easy task. People have intimate relationships. They fall in love, share their loves together with someone else. But sometimes or at some point, these relationships can end. When a relationship ends, the resulting change in each person's life depends on their beliefs about themselves and how they can throw them off into depression, anxiety, anger, stress, or on the other side, being okay with what's happening and accepting realities of their lives. When you have these kind of devastating feelings, you know, the nerves of a person are affected. It's nerve-wracking. It's gut-wrenching. They can be paralyzing, disappointing, provoking reactions, and they can stop one from trusting their future relationships. Well, the scars that breakups have left behind for so many people takes a very long time to heal, and it can affect their physical, mental, emotional, and their spiritual lives. When a person feels rejected, feels like a failure, or considers him or herself abandoned, it becomes very difficult to go on with life the way it is. Well, to address these worries, I have invited two amazing specialists and educators who will share their knowledge with us and show us that there is a light at the end of the dark tunnel of such broken hearts. The good news is that my guest and I will also be doing a workshop on Thursday, May 9th at Nesach Cultural Center at 7:30 p.m. To show you how you can feel empowered and act in your best interest even after a breakup. Building confidence and the ability to overcome such challenges of a broken heart is the core of this workshop that we are doing, and it's the core of any kind of transformation. Let me introduce my guest. My first guest is Dr. Dorit Halavi-Miller, who is a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice, and she is the founder and program director of Antioch University International Counseling Center, which it is the first center in Los Angeles area that provided sliding scale therapy for the American Iranian community since 1995. Dr. Miller is also a certified hypnotherapist, a certified premarital therapist, and a state-approved clinical supervisor. She's also a child development specialist who utilizes her past experience as a preschool director, and all of that information is used by her in her current position. Through all these years, Dr. Miller has promoted culturally sensitive therapeutic materials, and she's done many seminars and lectures in various locations, such as the Neuropsychiatric Institute at UCLA, the Talian at the Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and the Jewish Federation. Dr. Miller has also been speaking on the radio, a regular guest on TV, and a freelance writer for various magazines, including the Shofar and the Jewish World. She is also an active board member of various nonprofit organizations, She is the co-founder and executive board member of the Iranian American Mental Health Association and the Iranian American Psychological Association. In 2007, Dr. Miller was chosen as the Accomplished Woman of the Year by the Iranian Jewish Women's Organization. She speaks Farsi, Hebrew, and English fluently. My second guest is a young rabbi with a rich heritage. His rich heritage as the grandson of chief Iranian rabbi, the great Chacham Yedidia, and the son of Rav David Shofet, who is the head of the Netzach Cultural Center. His natural background to spiritual being is, I guess, the main reason we have him on today. He attended Yeshiva Gedola of Los Angeles High School. Then he continued his studies at Merkaz HaTorah in Jerusalem, Israel. Then he came back to the United States, continued his studies at Ner Israel Rabbinical College in Baltimore. He received rabbinical ordination there. Also, he received a bachelor's degree in Talmudic law. He also attended the John Hopkins University of Undergraduate Business School, where he received his Bachelor of Science there in Business and Management. Additionally, he attended Georgetown University Graduate School of Professional Studies in Real Estate. After marrying his lovely wife, Rabbi Yedidia also had the opportunity to study and practice many Jewish rituals and obtain the required certifications in Jerusalem. He then continued with learning the various techniques of melodic chanting as a Hazan under the great teachers in Israel. Well, I just have to say that he subsequently returned to Los Angeles, and we have the pleasure of having him at Netzach Cultural Center teaching classes and conducting lectures. Let's together welcome our two amazing guests. Hello, Dr. Miller. Hello, Rabbi Yedidia. You're both on.
Hello,
hi, Doctor.
Hi.
Hi, Dr. Sebia. Thanks for the lovely introduction, and glad to be on your great program. Hi, Rabbi.
Hello. How are you two great doctors? That was a lovely introduction. And
I'm glad that I have both of you with me today, and also we're going to see each other again on May 9th to go over a lot more of this subject, which is such an amazing subject. Almost everyone can relate with this topic. So beyond any doubt, it can be useful to everyone. We go through so many breakups and losses, and without any hesitation, I guess I have to say that's one of the most common emotional breakdowns that we have. What do you say, Dr. Miller? Let me ask you with this question. Start you with this question. Why do we have to stay in relationships that are problematic? What keeps us in there to begin with, and we're not going to break up from the beginning?
You know, love can sometimes fool us. Sometimes we fall in love and we love somebody that has a good influence on us, on our being. We get along with them. We are very compatible. But sometimes we stay in relationships that are harmful for us. They bring the worst in us, constant argument, fighting. And really, a lot of people wonder, why would somebody stay in those kind of relationships? So that's why I'm saying love can sometimes fool us a little bit. The reason that I think that many people do stay in relationships that are unhealthy, dysfunctional relationships, could be many. Some of them we can discuss a little bit and talk about it, but it could be sometimes that it may feel a void inside of us. Something that we're missing from our own childhood, and we think we can gain it or get it by being with another person that can fulfill those dreams that were missing for us as a child. As a matter of fact, many times what happened during our childhood and past experiences can influence what we need and looking for in current relationships. But again, it you know, Dr. Sadir, sometimes we're looking for the other person to make us happy. And, you know, that's one of the problems in relationships. We need to find somebody that we love because of their qualities, not because they fill a void or something that was missing from childhood for us.
That's right. It's like a dependence that we can have to anything else. It's kind of an addiction trait.
Right, right. And it fools you because you feel you're happy because that person is wonderful, but really you're happy because only sometimes it fills that void or that need that gets you to be addicted to that person. But in reality, you know, you may stay in relationships that you're constantly arguing or fighting, or maybe sometimes it could be because of materialistic reasons. You know, you need to have maybe fame or money, or sometimes it could be for beauty. It makes you feel good when you're with somebody who's beautiful next to you or somebody who's good looking. So you feel good about yourself. So it's kind of trying to fill a place within you or inside of you that is not complete, but you're trying to gain it through your partner. And even though you do not get along, you're not compatible, you keep on staying in those relationships.
Very good. Let me ask a question from the rabbi. Rabbi, what are your thoughts on breaking up being a part of growing up, a necessary step in emotional growth? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I believe it's very necessary. I believe it's very necessary. As Dr. Miller just talked about, getting yourself out of a dysfunctional relationship, how to get out of there, there's a lot of steps that, God willing, on May 9th we'll all go through. But believing that breaking up is a necessary step in emotional growth, it's 100%, especially when the relationship is not where it should be. A lot of times people are on the line. What that means is that they're like a backup. And no matter what, they're always going to keep thinking that, look, it's not going to work out with the other guy or with the other girl, and they'll come back to me. But that is just another sandpit, and they need to break up. And it's like we say a prayer every day. In that prayer, we thank God for giving us wisdom and understanding. What's the difference between wisdom and understanding? Well, if you want to say wisdom, it's something that it's more innate. It's something that how wise you are. But understanding is like experiences. It's how you treat them. How each and every experience that comes your way is trying to help you. It's not a failure. And if you're going to treat it as a failure, you know what happens? Then you become discouraged. And when a person becomes discouraged, they're going to think that, look, there's no chance for me to grow. However, the Talmud is telling you that, look, these understandings, these experiences, these quote-unquote mistakes that you're going through, that you're saying that I'm breaking up, you know what that is for you? Those mistakes are actually what's going to give you the clarity. And when you get that clarity, you're going to now be equipped. And when you're equipped, you'll be able to be ready for the next journey. Because if you're not going to be able to break up, you're not going to be able to grow. You're going to always keep one part of yourself as a root inside that dysfunctional mayhem that you came from. So you have to be able to break up. And
well,
that's the way
I understand from what you said is that even on a spiritual level, this word is a word that ends and we separate at some point from this word. So it's a good practice, maybe breaking up, to know that things are not forever and, you know, things are possible to change. Go ahead.
I mean, when you want to be dating, I don't think you want to really be thinking about that this world's going to be ending anytime soon. But in some ways, yes. In some ways, you have to realize that that sometimes it may be very difficult for that change or to get into that next step of growth because you have to sort of detach yourself. But that's very true what you're saying, Doc.
Right.
Very true.
Dr. Miller, what do you consider a good relationship? Are people able to change and make a relationship better, or if, you know, things are bad, they just stay the same way?
Well, you know, there are two questions to what you're asking, but let's go to the first one. What would be a good relationship? There are a few areas that you want to look into before you actually marry somebody, because as the rabbi said, you want to think of a relationship, not something that is going to end. And hopefully if you're going to get married, it's something that is going to last a lifetime. So it's important to consider a lot of things before you actually, you know, make that commitment and say the I do part. We want to look into many compatibility areas. You want to be compatible and you want to be similar in many of your beliefs and goals. Usually they say, and the research has shown, if you're coming from similar social class, if you're coming from similar religious background, very, very, very true in that area, even cultural background, educational background, those things are very important, even family styles. We're not looking for families who are friends and buddy-buddy with each other. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, but it kind of helps when there is the two families getting together have similar ideas and goals and belief system. They may not even be friends. They may not, have much in common as far as outing all the time, which I think in our community is very important for many people, but it doesn't have to be. However, family style is important. So it's important to be compatible in all these areas. And then, you know, common goals. You need to talk about your goals. You need to discuss children, how many children, what type of school, how you want to raise your children. You know, Dr. Sadir, there are so many times people are together and it looks like a beautiful, perfect match from the outside, but people do not talk and discuss very, very important subjects that will come up in a marriage. I believe that whenever you get married, you're going to have ups and downs, you're going to have stresses, you're going to have, God forbid, illnesses, you're going to have financial losses at times. So you have to be able to talk to your partner. You have to be able to communicate, to be able to handle each other's anger and each other's downs and each other's illnesses. And it's not all going to be rosy. That's part of life for everyone. We have losses and we have gains. And so it has to be somebody that you can fight with in a healthy way. And there is such a thing. You want to be able to communicate, to talk, to have active listening. To acknowledge each other. You don't have to agree with each other at all times. It's impossible, but you have to be able to discuss it and talk about it. So all these things, if both partners believe in that and work on that, would really help toward a good relationship. And as far as do people change, you know, we often, or many times I would say not often, we think that when we love somebody and there are certain things about that person that maybe we can change later on, it's going to work. But, you know, you need to consider everything about that person. And oftentimes people do not change. Whatever you see is what you get. And it can even get harder because, you know, real life starts before you get married. You're a little bit in a dreamland and fantasy and a lot of things going on and parties and get-togethers and, you know, planning the wedding, which can be beautiful. But when life starts, you have responsibilities and you have a lot of things to take care of. So you have to know that the other partner is going to be the way he is and or she is. And, you know, people change a little bit, but their personalities is not going to change. So we need to consider all that before you actually make that final commitment for marriage.
Certainly. One of the things that I often tell my couple clients is that marriage is one of the most difficult things to go through, and it needs everyday communication. The biggest problem is that people have not learned how to communicate, and once that communication, as you were mentioning, doesn't exist, nothing positive is going to happen. So we need to have a style of communication that's open and honest, and once that happens, changes are possible. However, the assumption that somebody can change somebody else, that's an absolutely incorrect assumption. We can never change somebody else. We can only change ourselves. And if we are willing to make that change, the changes in the relationship become possible. Otherwise, as you were saying, some people go into relationships or marriages in the hope of changing somebody down the road. Those are the ones that are doomed and they go for failure.
Dr. Sadir, just you said something, you know, added to what I was saying about communication, and it's interesting. I think everybody who listens, maybe they can just look into themselves a little bit and think and see why is it that people are afraid to talk. Oftentimes, especially in our culture, many times people are afraid to communicate and talk, and they don't say exactly what they feel and think. It's something we all have to work on, you know, being open and being confrontive in a professional, in a healthy way, in a respectful way is nothing wrong with that. You express your feeling, you express your needs, and you let the other person do the same, and then you can discuss it. But, you know, many people are afraid to communicate. They think if they don't talk about it, things will just go away or disappear, and that's when later on it leads to, you know, anger and sadness and depression and anxiety and all the other symptoms of an unhealthy relationship.
That's right. That's I personally have put a lot of my emphasis in my practice on teaching effective communication, and I think that's something that we all need to go and look into. If we learn how to communicate, it's not only in marriage and relationships, it kind of changes everything, even our business words. And
exactly. That's right.
I wanted to comment. That was very beautiful. I just wanted to comment on one very fine point about changing someone when they get married. At a rabbi, he always used to say, when you get married, you're not adopting your wife and you're not adopting your husband. You're not raising your wife and you're not raising your husband.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, just to reiterate the point that Dr. Miller said over there. A lot of people, they believe that they get married, unfortunately, and they'll nurture the husband, they'll nurture the wife as if that they're their baby, unfortunately.
Very nicely said.
Very nice. So, Rabbi, tell us, please, a lot of people are hesitant of getting into relationship because they're afraid of breakup. What can we tell them? How can we convince them that they don't need to be afraid?
You're saying that they might not want to date again. Is that what you're trying to say?
Some people don't even start dating. I know, as a matter of fact, I meet a lot of clients who are not getting into any relationship, you know, just for the fear of rejection or just breaking down. And also, as you said, a lot of people who have been in relationships in the past and didn't work out the way they wanted, they're also afraid of going through a new relationship.
Well, I can say like this. You know, first of all, when they go through a breakup, you know, it's immediately you have to realize it's not something that's logical that you can speak to them. It's at the times where it's very emotional. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of feelings that are going on. What's going on right now is, as we call it, it's like a sympathy time. It's not a lecture time. You have to take your time with the friend. A person is right now seeing that everything just went wrong. Everything. His dating life, his business life, his personal life. Even though it's true, nothing went wrong. There was a breakup or there was a heartbreak from them. And when they're feeling like this, what you as a friend can add to him is a shoulder. And not just a shoulder to say, okay, just lean on me. Rather to encourage success. It's like the story of a fellow, he's lifting up a weight. And as he's lifting up the weight, he tells his spotter, I can't lift it up any higher. The spotter puts his hand on the weight, and his friend was able to finally pick up the entire weight. And he asks the spotter, so how much of it did you pick up? He said, I didn't pick up anything. What do you mean you didn't pick up anything? You did it all yourself. You just saw my hand on it, but you thought I was helping you. You need that hand to encourage success. And it's all like this. Sometimes things are gonna be scary, and they're gonna fear what's gonna happen next. And by you, when you're sitting over there with your friend, and he feels that he's all in the dark, you tell him a story. You tell him a story that, look, I had also dating problems. Another friend, you tell him stories of, look, they also had dating problems. Not to say that, look, they also had it, but to share funny, stupid events that are ridiculous. Because you're over here in order to help your friend, in order to come out of a heartbreak. Now, what is, should I explain what a heartbreak is, or should I save that for later?
Oh, go ahead. I think you are right on the subject, and go ahead and please.
Because what is a heartbreak that you as a friend, you're over there in order to help with? A heartbreak, besides for being the most common conversation starter nowadays, heartbreak is an indicator. It shows exactly where you stand. It shows how humane you are. You know, it shows how severe the relationship was. If the heartbreak is non-existent, then most probably the relationship wasn't so strong. There wasn't really anything there. But sometimes the heartbreak was so severe that that means that there was a very strong relationship. Or sometimes, as Dr. Miller was talking about before, it shows another source. It shows that it could have been where the fellow, he has a feeling of loss. He has a feeling of reliving a detachment. Sometimes, even if it's a horrible relationship, the fact that he lost the person feels alone. And he even comes down to the fact, and this happened to several friends of mine, I don't have a chance anymore. I wanted her, only her. I wanted him, only him. Even though you can tell him he's going to be miserable, it didn't make a difference. You know, it says in the Torah, it says that a person was made in order not to be alone. And you can see that. We all need a companion. We need a companion, a friend, a companion. God willing for everyone to find the right husband, to find the right wife. We need a companion in order to show that, look, that we're able to go through tough times together, the best times, and also sometimes times that are much more trying. So as a friend, that when you're over there and you're giving that encouragement, you're showing that, look, that you will weather through all of these situations. You'll be able to take care of it, but you have to be there as an understanding friend, not a friend that's there in order to give a lecture. You have to sympathize with them, because it's nothing logical that you could ever fix.
Definitely. Great, great way of explaining it, Rabbi. Dr. Miller.
Dr. Sadiq, I'd like to take a piggyback ride on what the beautiful way that Rabbi Shofer described it and talked about people needing friends, and always reminds me of the song with Barbara Streisand, people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And I think with our relationship with friends and people, many times our own friends, even relatives, close relatives, they get very sad and upset seeing us sad, and they want to take that pain away. And I think that's part of the reason they would start lecturing, or maybe they would try to take the pain away from you and even tell you to stop, you know, stop being upset, get out already, you know, get over him or get over her and move on, and, you know, kind of trying to shut down your feelings. So as the rabbi was saying, it's very important to be good listeners, active listening, and sometimes people need just the space to vent out and talk and express, and for you to acknowledge and be there for them, as beautifully as the rabbi said, be a shoulder for them to put their head on. So I think it was, you know, very important to know that from both ends, being the person who did go through the breakup and also being the person who's a friend or a relative or a family of the person who went through the breakup.
Very valuable, very valuable. And, you know, we only have meaning when there is another person exists. By ourselves in isolation, we become meaningless. So having somebody, a companion, as you both said brilliantly, is so important to have that other mirror, somebody that we can reflect ourselves upon in, and from that point of view also see ourselves. Even, you know, if that person is just ears, the way that we explain ourselves just allows us to hear ourselves and see what we're going through. Dr. Miller,
right.
What is the best way to break up? If somebody has to end a relationship, are there any good ways? Are there any ways that we can feel safer, or we can reduce the tension or the discomfort?
I'm smiling as you're asking that question. Is there such a thing? But actually, because, you know, breakup is painful. Breaking up, heartbreak, it hurts, it's sad. You went through a relationship, whether or not maybe you broke up because of family differences, maybe you broke up because of your the culture, religion differences, maybe you broke up because you know, pressure from other people, maybe it was financial, whatever the reason, maybe you're fighting all the time. So whatever the reason is, you went through a relationship, you put your time, you put your effort and heart and spend it with somebody else for, you know, could be for months or even years at times. So getting over a breakup and going through the process is painful. You know, there's absolutely nothing you can do about the pain. You have to go through it. However, we can make it easier both for ourselves and for our partner if we do it in a healthy way, if we do it in a respectful way, if we do it in an honest way, if we do it, you know, planning for it. It's like, God forbid, when somebody, you know, an accident or something happens and suddenly they tell you the other person, you know, is gone, is dead. And that's the shock just gets you into a traumatic experience. And it's much better if things kind of happen slowly and you talk about it and you discuss it and you share stories and information and why it didn't work out, why it's not going to work out, rather than just cutting it, you know, suddenly and without any preparation or anything like that, especially if you're considering marriage and, you know, both sides think that they're going to marry the other person and then suddenly, you know, you cut up the relationship. So I really recommend for everybody who's listening to this, discuss, talk about it. Don't do it over the phone, please. Don't do it with a text. And I've heard stories of things like that. Put time, get together, talk about it. Don't be afraid to discuss everything with each other. Process it together. Talk and explain everything to each other. Listen. And then, of course, you have to do what's best for you and you have to, you know, move on and do the breakup. But if you can, sometimes you cannot do that. Sometimes you're in some abusive relationship that you just have to cut it cold turkey, and that's a different situation. But in most cases, when there's a good, loving relationship, but there are reasons or issues that came up that, you know, does not allow you to get married, it's important to do it the right way, respectful way, calm way, and again, communication and talking about it. And I also want to stress that, you know, there are many people, a lot of people are dating right now, they're going through a serious relationship, and it's really important not to badmouth and say anything bad about your old partner, your ex, or anything like that. Again, unless it was very abusive and things like that, but to keep all the information you shared with each other, and that was a special relationship on its own for whatever reason, and it just didn't work out. Again, it could be different if it was a painful and hurtful and abusive relationship. That's a whole different
That's a very case. Valid point that you brought up. Sometimes it doesn't need to be ending with a lot of tension and bad-mouthing, as you said. Some cases, yes, when there is abuse, then it's a little bit different, but still, I guess right. The end of a relationship needs some closure, and with leaving it with open wounds is not going to help.
Exactly.
That brings me to my next question from a rabbi. Rabbi, at what time closure can happen? You know, a lot of clients that I see, after years of ending a relationship, they're still in pain when they come to see me. So that closure has not happened for them. What are your thoughts on that? At what time do you believe that the closure can be possible?
Well, remember that the breakup is a healing process. And for everyone, you know, unfortunately, I don't ever like to make this type of comparison, but in some ways, it's like a mourning process. At the beginning, it's a lot more difficult, and as healing, just as time helps through mourning, it helps also in the relationship. However, each person, when it comes to the time of actual closure, it can be any time. There's so many variables that are going on over here. How severe the heartbreak is, depending on how long they were together, how invested they were together, especially the time that they spent together. If they have a kid, it all depends on everything. Now, until the time that they're able to actually see this whole situation unbiasedly, meaning without any anger or emotions, which is a very, very difficult thing to do, it's very difficult to have the closure. So one of the biggest ways that a person who is dating and they just went out of a relationship and it was very hard to break up. And one of the best ways for them to actually make a strong closure is to get back out there. Get back out there and date. And when you see a positive date, invest yourself in that date. Because the only way that you'll be able to let yourself go is by finding a new one, by finding a new beginning. Because if you're not going to ever let yourself go, if you're not going to have that closure, you're not going to invest yourself into the date, and who knows, you might have a great time with the person. That person could have even been your next husband or your next wife. But the fact is that you have to be able to invest in that person by letting go. And the only way that you'll be able to let go is to realize, as I said before, that there is a light. You know, they say that pain and success is hand in hand. How does that work out? Because when you have that pain, let's say if you go through any pain or suffering, the success you have after that is a success that you've never experienced in your life before. And that's exactly what that is. It's very difficult. There's no way that you can automatically coach someone to go through a closure. It's a healing process. But there are ways, such as being back out there, not giving up, not feeling that's it. There's no chance for me. Not having these thoughts in mind. And when you don't have these thoughts in mind, you'll be able to create a clear pathway to get closer to that area of closure.
I like very much the comparison you made with grief. As grief has stages, I believe this closure, as you were explaining it, also needs time to go through those stages. And then eventually after the stages are done, then as you mentioned, starting is a real good solution, starting over and getting into a new relationship. As I was just reading from your university, Johns Hopkins Medical School, however, there was a new study that came out on broken heart syndrome, and the best remedy that they had recommended after they had realized all of the possibilities of this being so similar to a heart attack was the passage of time. That was the number one remedy that they had come up, and that's pretty much what you were suggesting, and I think that's the number one remedy also. We got to go through the process and let it come to an end. However, if there are past experiences, as before Dr. Miller was suggesting, in childhood and in earlier stages of life, now the traumas that are re-traumatized in this new relationship, those can get on the way of having a closure and then can keep a person in a loop of what we can call a post-traumatic stress disorder, which those breakups of the past keep on repeating and then they don't really allow for the closure. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Miller? Dr. Miller?
Daniel, hello?
Yes, do you hear us?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I got cut off for a second.
I was just asking a question. I was suggesting, I don't know if you heard me, I was suggesting that going through the stages of grief is similar through the process of closure, and I was suggesting that if there are past traumas in somebody's life, the closure becomes different, just like in a post-traumatic stress disorder. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. You know, past experiences or childhood experiences, that especially those that have not been resolved, and they get triggered again in our adult relationships, we sometimes tend to either do some self-blame, or the anger gets resurfaced again, or how we were silent as a child and didn't express ourselves. Many things get triggered again, and it does affect our healing process. So it is very important, which kind of is part of, you know, what would help us to move on would be to get some help. I think I highly recommend people who go through breakups to get professional help, go to therapy, because it's not just the breakup and the separation or the ending of a relationship. It's many times what you say or do to yourself after the relationship ends. It's the negative judgment that you put on yourself. It's the self-blame. It's the anger that has never been resolved since childhood, let's say. It's the separation anxiety that hasn't been resolved. You know, many times many children do have separation anxiety when sometimes a partner leaves, even though you may think it's the best thing that the partner should leave, just the fact that they left gets that separation anxiety triggered again. And that's why in some cases where you see you sabotage yourself in a relationship and you end it before they end it, and you know it's going to come up. So you want to be the one to end the relationship so you don't feel that pain of somebody abandoning you, leaving you, which oftentimes comes from childhood experiences.
Rabbi, let me ask you the last question. So what do you think when people talk bad about the other person? I think Dr. Miller said a little bit about that. So I want you to, from your point of view, give us some perspective on that. People talk bad about the other person after the end of a relationship, or they seek revenge after a breakup. What are your suggestions on that? How can we stop this?
Well, before, like we said, there was a whole step of healing. By healing, you need time. By time, also, every person has a gift, and that gift is the ability to forget. And if a person cannot forget, they're going to keep reliving every situation again and again. They'll never be able to see that light. If a person's going to have that revenge, they're going to have that speech towards that fellow. They're going to blog it. They're going to put up on Facebook. They're going to put up on people's college dorm rooms, however they want to do it. What all that does is just leaves a huge void inside of them. It will never let them finally let themselves go. They'll never be able to invest themselves fully into someone else. They'll always leave something inside of them. They will never have a closure that they've been looking for. Because the only way that a person can have a closure is if they realize that one, as I said, it's very hard to get to this stage, but when they realize unbiasedly that not through anger, not through emotions, but rather they realize logically that why it didn't make sense. Because at the first step, a person will do many irrational things, things that are completely illogical, such as they might be screaming, they might be cursing away, and they might have a ton of horrible things to say about the other person. But the true fellow, the one that wants to relive their life again, wants to actually get to the next step, wants to create a family, a new relationship, sadly enough, people think that, look, what, I shouldn't retaliate? That's what they did to me? Yeah, but where will that get you? The more that you put yourself in that hole, it's like in quicksand. A person who struggles and struggles more, the more they're going to keep falling. You want to be able to lift yourself above the other person.
Amazing. Yes, that absolutely. You explained it very nicely, Dr. Miller.
It sounds, Dr. Sadir, just to kind of follow up on what Rabbi Shaped was saying. It sounds like when you that hate, really, I call it oftentimes is inner poison. When you carry hate, you're actually constantly putting drops of poison into your own system, your own body, your own health, your mind, and it drains you. And that stress and hate is just takes people down to the point that they cannot find the open door anymore. Doors stay closed as long as we keep hate inside of us. And I know it's difficult, and I know there is pain. That's why closures are important. That's why you do therapy. That's why it's important to talk with each other about it so you have a closure. Closure is extremely important. But continuing with hate and retaliating, it's such a quick fix, and it just lasts maybe even an hour. And then later on, you're continuing the hate and the poison inside of you.
Exactly.
They hurt themselves at the end, nobody else.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, I really thank both of you for participating in this talk. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm really glad that I'm going to be working with both of you on May 9th, talking in detail about the spiritual, about the psychological, and also the mind-body effects of breaking up and the healing of it. This is happening on 9th at the NESA Educational and Cultural Center at 142 South Rexford Drive in Beverly Hills. The telephone numbers are 310-940-7768, or you can just directly call NESA Cultural Center and get the information. Do you have anything else to add on? And please, if you have any websites or any information that how people can be in touch with you, please go ahead and mention that. And then after that, we'll say goodbye. And I hope to have a few more of these programs with you on air eventually soon.
Go ahead, Rabbi. I just wanted to thank you so much, Dr. Sadi, about for this entire show, how everything was conducted amazingly, how everything just, how you were able to follow up on each of us. That was very impressive. And I would love to enjoy more of these talks with you and to share more thoughts among your great listeners. I wanted to thank you again.
Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Miller.
Same thing over here, Dr. Sadil, Rabbi. It was a pleasure talking and using a conference call in addition to being interviewed. It's difficult usually to do a conference call, so now we're going through the interview process as well. It was wonderful. Thank you. And looking forward to May 9th as well. And I just want to add one more thing about the grieving process, just to end it, that I think a lot of people may not be aware of it. The grieving process that we all talked about would be the common dagba that we say, which is, you know, you go through denial, anger, grief, bargaining, and then acceptance. So just want to add that before we close and talk much more about that and other things on May 9th. Thank you so much, both of you.
Definitely going to invite both of you for other interviews on different subjects. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Sure, our pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.